This is the Financial Sense News Hour. With the president of PFS Group, Jim Poplava. Since 1982, PFS Group has offered asset management and educational resources that have helped investors build, maintain, and preserve their wealth. And now, our lifetime income experts, Jim Poplava and Kathleen Harris.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to another reprise edition of Lifetime Income. If you're listening to this program, well, let me say Happy New Year, because it is the new year. It'll be 2014 if you're listening to this program. In this reprise program of Lifetime Income, I wanted to cover a topic. We cover so many things about retirement planning, financial planning here in the program. And a lot of you said, okay, I get it. I know I need a plan. I need a retirement plan. I need a financial plan. I need to put my finances in order. But just like finding a new doctor, how do I choose a financial planner? So in this program, we're going to talk about how to choose an advisor, all the different questions you want to ask, the kind of services that you want to look for, because these are important. It's just like, you know, choosing your family physician or a CPA or somebody that does your taxes or an estate attorney. There are a lot of questions out there that you need to ask before you make that important decision. So we're going to cover that in today's reprise program.
And here's John Loeffler sitting in for Kathleen Harris. The guest we're featuring this week is Peter Gravett. It's a redo of the interview that Jim did with the Secretary of the California Department of Veterans Affairs. And Peter and Jim will discuss what is available for veterans in terms of medical care, home care, schooling, insurance, and other areas, especially in the light of all of the changes that are going on in health care right now. That's coming up in the second part today of this reprise edition of Lifetime Income. Hi, everybody. John Loeffler sitting in for Kathleen Harris this week, who had the bad taste to go on vacation at the end of summer.
Terrible.
And desert her post.
And here you and I are working. I mean, you know, what a life.
What a life, yeah. But speaking of life, which is what everyone lives, when you get to a certain stage of your life, you think about retirement. That's why we talk about lifetime income here on the program. And since we began this series last year, one of the constant themes that has been thumped on the program is the importance of having a retirement plan. 70% of Americans don't have one. This is probably one reason, say, for example, why the baby boomers are facing difficulties as they head into retirement. And by the way, the government is going to be heading into difficulties because they're going to have to pay all of these people with monies they don't have. But that's a subject for a different show. But on an individual basis, this not having a retirement plan means you fall back into some kind of default. And given what we've seen over the last few years, two bear markets in stocks, a bear market in real estate, and probably the worst for items that people used to invest in years ago, 0% interest rates, which are affecting many investments. This is putting a lot of potential retirees and some already existing retirees in a very difficult situation. So what we're going to do today is talk about a retirement plan, which we've done before, but we're doing it from the perspective of choosing a financial planner or investment advisor, which is a very, very important thing to do, because a lot of times you may not want to be busy doing all of the things of investment or having to ride herd on your own investments. So you need someone who knows what he or she is doing to do it for you. And in order to pick a good advisor, you need to know what you need to know. That's the first thing. And the questions that you need to ask. So when you finally do make that selection, you know you've got the right person. But anyway, Jim, if we looked at the issues that are facing everyone today, I would say the whole atmosphere we're in right now is, I call it dicey, meaning the old rules don't work. The new rules only work short term. Somebody's got to monitor all of this stuff. What are the dangers facing people today?
I would probably say, John, at the top of the list is probably zero interest rates and probably the lack of sufficient capital, either as a result of not saving enough, putting money aside, or, for example, two bear markets. Not only just two bear markets in stocks, but we also had a bear market in real estate, because up until 2007 and 2009, I mean, real estate prices generally were stable and they went up every year. So a lot of retirees were counting on, well, you know, when it comes to retirement, we'll sell the big house, we'll downsize, we'll pull capital out of that house, and that capital will be available. All of a sudden, housing prices fell 40%. And so I would say probably zero interest rates. I mean, you know, let's face it, money today isn't worth what it was 10 to 20 years ago. Think of what you have to pay for anything you buy today, whether it's gasoline, your insurance premiums, your utilities, a new car. I mean, everything has gone up. You also take a look at, you know, what interest rates are paying. I mean, I'm looking at a Bloomberg screen right now. 1 year treasuries are still at 0.1%. And so, you know, traditionally, John, when a person retired, what would happen is they would shift a major portion of their assets towards income assets, things like bonds and CDs. Heck, I can remember when I got in this business, when you got 13 and 14% a free toaster at the bank. Of course, that was the 1980s. But because they need income to supplement what they're getting from either Social Security or maybe they're fortunate enough to have a pension, but unfortunately, as a result of the financial crisis and then, of course, the Fed's quantitative easing policy, interest rates are at century lows. I mean, 5 years ago, think about this, folks. 5 years ago, on $1 million, you could have got 5%. You could have got 5% in a bank CD insured by FDIC, or you could have gone into a two-year treasury note. So you could have been getting $50,000 on $1 million. Today, you're lucky if you get 0.3% to 0.5% on a safe investment. A two-year treasury note is a little over 0.3%. 5 years ago, it was 5%. So $1 million 5 years ago, you were getting $50,000. Today, you'd really be lucky to get $5,000.
As I'm listening to you talk here, Jim, this seems to present a real quandary. Because if you really want to make money and you want to do it towards retirement, the question you have to ask yourself is, what do you do with the Fed holding interest rates at 0%? They've done that for 5 years now. So far, they're not even thinking of raising rates until 2015. And remember, that date's a moving target because, according to Ben Bernanke, it's going to be dependent on what the economy happens to be doing at any given time. Short-term interest rates are low, but long-term rates are rising. And if retirees start reaching for yield by going into bond funds, they are at real risk for losing real money because bond funds have cut dividends. Retirees are losing money with many bond funds down double digits. So this is that dicey area that I was talking about when we started this conversation.
And it's probably one of the reasons, John, we keep emphasizing you need to put together a retirement plan. I mean, you know, if I can use an analogy, think of that retirement plan as kind of your roadmap to retirement security. I mean, you think about getting in your car and going to someplace you've never been before or taking a trip in your car. Maybe you're taking a family vacation. You wouldn't leave on a trip without a Google map or perhaps using your GPS. What I like to think of is having a retirement plan is your financial GPS.
Yes, and what you really want is one of those GPSs financially that says, wait, stop, go back. You missed a turn. You're doing the wrong thing. Are you naturally stupid or do you just have to work at it? Something. But anyway, since we're speaking of retirement plans, let's address this really core issue of picking a financial advisor. This is really critical.
Well, what we've done is put together about 10 questions, and I'm sure we could probably even add more to that. But I think probably the first question that you want to ask is, all right, if somebody's going to do a financial plan for you, you want to know, okay, how are they compensated for the services? In other words, are you going to be charged a fee? Are you going to be charged a percentage of assets? Or is it free? Now, let me tell you, folks, if it's free, you better start asking some more questions. Because ask yourself, is this person going to do this retirement plan for free because they're in the charity business? No, they're going to get compensated probably by selling a product. So you really need to understand what it costs. It's just like any time you go to a store, whether you're buying a service, you know, you're going to ask, okay, what is this service going to cost me? So the first question you probably want to do is ask, what is this going to cost? How are you going to get compensated? Is it on a fee basis? Is it a percentage? Or is it free? That's probably the first question you want to ask.
You know, I guess this is a logical follow-up question, but if I go to a doctor, for example, I want to know what the doctor's credentials are. Is he an MD? What's his background? How good's his training? Because sometimes not even certificates do the right thing. There are people who are bad in their own profession. So how do you, A, look for the credentials? And then is there any way of checking how good they've actually done?
Well, the first thing, John, you mentioned, if you go to a doctor, you just assume you want to see that plaque on the wall that says, you know, I got my medical degree from what university. So there are a lot of certifications when it comes to financial advisors. Probably the most widely recognized is a certified financial planner, which is issued by the College of Financial Planning. There's the CHFC. If you're an investment advisor, you want to look for an RIA. But you want to look at some kind of certification that says, hey, this person really knows what they're doing when it comes to financial planning. And so right now, those are the two prominent designations when it comes to retirement planning. And now there's even getting to be some specialty designations that's being issued by the College of Financial Planning. For example, the Chartered Financial Planning Counselor. And there's numbers of different designations that are out there. I would probably say at the top of the list is a CFP, a Certified Financial Planner.
I think something else that you really want to ask here, too, is say you have a plan and then a planner, or theoretically the planner may be helping you plan your plan. But do all planners do everything? I mean, what services does the planner provide? Does he do just investments or tax advice? How about referral services to other planners in areas where he or she may not be as up to speed? How does that work?
Well, I think, you know, the first thing is, all right, you're going to put together a financial plan. That financial plan may require a couple things. It may require some legal work, for example, setting up a will, a trust, which we're going to be talking about here on the program. It may even involve tax planning. Let's say that you're getting ready to retire. You're looking at lump sum distributions, a conversion to a Roth IRA, taking out distributions from an IRA, deferred compensation, access to tax information. In other words, does the planner work with a team of professionals? John, it's very similar to what happens when you go to a doctor. You probably have a general practitioner that you go to for your annual physical. And if there is a medical issue that comes up, you know, what you want is that doctor to refer you to a specialist. So anybody that's a financial planner today is always working with other professionals because there may be changes in, let's say, tax reporting or changes in tax consequences and withholding, working with an estate planner. And then also, I think another issue that often comes up too is working with a corporate trustee. We're running into more and more of this with elder abuse and with surviving spouses, with Alzheimer's, dementia. So you want to work with somebody that is not only just capable of doing the financial plan, implementing the investment recommendations, but also working with a cadre of professionals that can bring in, or even working with your own professional to implement that plan, because a financial plan or a retirement plan is usually going to involve legal issues, tax issues, as well as investment issues.
Well, what about the type of clients a person specializes in? I mean, if you go to see a doctor, you have a general practitioner, and then if something requires special attention, you go to that specialized doctor, maybe an osteopath, maybe an oncologist, whatever it happens to be. Doctors have specialties. What about financial planners?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, we've specialized in retirement planning. That's how I got started in the business back in 1980. Some planners specialize in charitable giving, divorce, small businesses. I mean, there's a whole host of specialties that planners will specialize in. And that's very important too, because, I mean, obviously, if you have a particular interest, okay, let's say your interest is small business planning or you have an interest in retirement planning, you want to go to somebody that specializes in that area, that are aware of all the things that you're going to have to deal with, whether it's rolling over a pension plan, deciding to take a lump sum or annuity option from the company, how best to maximize your Social Security benefits, limiting taxation, what best investment portfolio creates the kind of security that you're looking for, and more importantly, the income, but also even addresses future issues when it comes to medical planning, which is one area, John, I find often left out in retirement planning. Most people just don't think about it. You know, they retire, maybe they're in good health at the time they retire, but later on, medical issues start coming up, whether it's dementia, Alzheimer's, or a serious debilitating disease.
You know, the part about focusing on sources of income and what you do to generate income is one thing. That's what I call the mechanics. Even when I go to a doctor, I'm looking for that doctor's philosophy, how he seems to work his way through issues, he or she, seems to work his way through problems. And to me, that's about 50% of the battle, so to speak. It's not enough just to A, have the certificate, B, have all the facts there. I want to know how that person processes the facts. I think philosophy is very important in picking a planner.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's various ways to make money in the market. Some planners use package products like mutual funds, ETFs. Others are, they have a money management wing where they manage assets, control risk. And then the other thing is, you know, what is the philosophy of the firm? How do they pick investments? You know, if they're going to recommend an investment portfolio or a mix for your retirement plan, what's the philosophy behind it? And I would say probably more important today, John, is something, you know, we didn't think about for, let's say, pretty much almost two decades, is risk management. I mean, pretty much for the 80s and 90s, if you were in stocks and bonds, for the most part, they went up each year. I mean, there wasn't much to do. If you had a bank account, well, all you did was rolled it over and you got another double-digit return or a high single-digit return. Now, in the last 13 years, we've gone through two major bear markets in stocks where, you know, the S&P and the Dow lost over 40%, and also a bear market in real estate. So you really want to know how that person arrives at their, let's say, investment recommendations, the thought process behind it, and how they're going to manage your account, how they're going to basically manage risk for you, because you have two concerns when you're retired. You want to have sufficient income to allow you to live comfortably throughout your retirement years and also provide for future contingencies, but also you want safety of principle. How is risk going to be managed is also important.
You know, I always like to be proactive in things too, Jim, regardless of what I'm doing. I call it contingency building. And in my mind, having been in this field for four decades, communication is really important. You can have somebody monitoring your accounts, but if you never hear from that person, then you start to wonder, gee, I wonder what's going on. So part of that philosophy I mentioned earlier, I think, is an important communication skill where they are communicating to you what's going on with your investments as well.
Exactly, because it's important that you have a plan, but it's also important that you monitor the plan. You know, are you living comfortably? Are your income needs being met? Is risk being managed? Or let's face it, John, I mean, we live in a headline world with multiple forms of communication today for news, whether it's the internet, you know, whether it's your cell phone, mobile, Twitter. I mean, think about all the news that we get throughout the day. And a lot of times, some of this news can get scary, and never mind the media tends to overdramatize these things. And so sometimes it's just important if something big happens. Let's say the market corrects itself like it did in May and June when the Fed first started talking about tapering. Do you have somebody that you can talk to? Wow, is this going to be a crash? I mean, there were a lot of calls that were issued by prominent people that said, get out of the market. A crash is coming. This is it. You want somebody that you can talk to and say, hey, I just read this, or the media is telling me this. You know, what's your view? And you want somebody that you can get in touch with, that stays in touch with you, contacts you, and also somebody that you can say, hey, you know, I'm finding I need a lot more income, or you know what? I think I'm less adverse to risk. I mean, it's amazing, John, to see the difference in individuals over the last 5 or 6 years. 5 or 6 years ago, it was all about capital preservation. Now that the stock market is up about 150% and interest rates are still at zero, people are saying, whoa, you know, maybe staying in cash, or even now this year, the new one is, I didn't realize I could lose money in bonds. And that's what's happening. So staying in contact, I think, is very important.
Here are some other considerations too, Jim. What about either working with an individual, or could you use a team approach? Can you have a couple of financial planners and divide things up, or use some other strategy?
I like the team approach, John, because it's just like you see it in medical offices. You go to HMOs, where you go to, one of the places I go to is Scripps. I like going to Scripps because, you know, if you need an x-ray, they got an x-ray department. If you need to have your blood drawn, they have facilities for that. They have specialists in one building. You know, it's very difficult for one person to do everything. And I think the team approach is a much better approach because not everybody can have all the knowledge in a particular area, whether it's taxes, whether it's various aspects to do with highly compensated executives, deferred comp, selling a business, and then also just from the viewpoint of managing money. And that's one of the reasons that we have done in our shop over the years is we've broadened the approach. I'm a CFP. We've got two candidates that are getting their chartered retirement planning counselor's designation. We have a CFA. We have a CMT. We have a bond specialist. And then we also have contacts that we use here locally with legal services, whether it's a special needs trust or a special kind of tax planning trust or even accountants. I just think the days, we all hear about the complexity of the laws today. I mean, the markets have become more complex. They're more integrated today globally. And I think planning has become more complex due to the changes in the laws. Never forget, every year that Congress is in session, more regulations and laws are being passed. So it's a constant battle to keep up with all of these regulations and changes in laws, and not to mention the change in the investment environment.
You know, you can't underestimate either a personality fit, because if you go to see the doctor, you like to know the doctor's listening to you. How many doctors have you been to that were very, very busy and they would run in and, you know, give you their attention for 3 minutes and go, oh, quick, take these pills and run out. And I go, yeah, that's not really quite what I was thinking of there. Some doctors have very good bedside manners. Others, you go, wow, where'd they get the personality school from? So I would think that would be important here, not only just communication, but part of that communication is there's got to be an intuitive feel, I would say.
Well, I think one of the real important ones is the person that you're dealing with listening to you? Because if you're trying to ask that person a question and they're not really listening to what you have to say, but are already recommending, oh, I think we need to do this, or they automatically start recommending product to you, I think having somebody that has listening skills is very, very important. Because if they don't, something that you are trying to communicate to that may be a very important issue to you, and if they don't pick up on it, you know, what kind of plan are you going to get? And that's, John, having somebody that can listen, or somebody to talk to that listens to what you have to say, is, I think, very important. Coming up next, I'll be speaking with Peter Gravett, Secretary of the California Department of Veteran Affairs, coming up right after this. Joining me as my special guest on Lifetime Income this week is Peter Gravett. He's Secretary at the California Department of Veteran Affairs. And Peter, let's start out with some basics here. Who is eligible for veteran benefits? I mean, how many years in the service? Could you describe the eligibility, if you would?
Yes, the eligibility varies. Some veterans qualify, others do not. It's based upon a number of factors. First of all, any person that served in the military and that retired from the military is eligible for some benefit. Other veterans who did not retire but who may have suffered an injury or illness associated with their active duty military would also be eligible for veteran benefits, and therefore their families also in both cases.
Okay, so if I, let's say, made a career in the military, retired from the military, I have those benefits, or let's say I served in the military, got injured as a result of that, then I could qualify.
Yes, sir. That injury could be physical, mental, emotional, any type of injury.
Okay. Now, let's talk about what is available as benefits. You were kind enough to send me some statistics. One of them I thought was fascinating. 70% of California's 1.8 million veterans are 50 years and older. That's quite a bit, considering the size of the population of the state.
It is quite a bit. But if you consider the veterans that we still have remaining in California from World War II, and there's still quite a few, and all the Korean War veterans, and then we come into the Cold War period of the late 50s, 60s, and then we go into the Vietnam era, and then after Vietnam we have another Cold War period, and then we go into the Iraq, Afghanistan, and Bosnia, Kosovo era, and then, of course, current day. So the veteran situation goes back 50, 60, 70 years.
Well, let's talk about some of those benefits. Let's start with probably the one that's most obvious and of concern to many older vets, which would be health care. What's available?
Health care is available to any veteran who retired from the military. If they served a full 20 years or more, or if they served less than 20 years and retired medically, they qualify for medical benefits. Also, any military person who has served in one of the most recent wars that we've had, Iraq, Afghanistan, and others, if they served and then a discharge after 3, 4, 5 years, they are eligible for health care benefits for up to 5 years after they leave the military.
Does a lot of that have to do with sometimes, you know, when you serve in combat, there may be mental stress that may follow afterwards that doesn't surface, let's say, when you're discharged?
Exactly. And not just mental, but also some physical ailments may show up later. And so that's why they had that 5-year benchmark to make sure that all veterans are inclusive in the health care plan even after they leave the military.
Let's talk about what those health care benefits entail. I know there's VA hospitals. Are there like HMOs, or is it mainly just a VA hospital?
Well, on the health care side, one of the benefits, of course, that's the main one that most veterans focus on is the health care, the other benefits. But just to focus on the health care part, yes, there are over 150 VA medical centers throughout the nation, I believe 11 in California. And then each medical center, which is a hospital, has several outreach clinics, which we call CBOX, or a community-based outpatient clinics. A veteran who is eligible for the health care can go to any of those clinics or to the VA medical centers themselves and receive benefits. They first must contact the VA and sign up for the VA to make sure that the VA knows who they are.
Can you tell me, Peter, is there a website that they can do this on?
Yes, there's a couple of websites. They can actually do it through our department, which is California Department of Veteran Affairs, and that's cdva.ca.gov, stands for California Department of Veteran Affairs, cdva.ca.gov, G-O-V. That's a state website, and there's a link there for the federal, or they can go direct to the federal website, which is va.us.gov.
Now, we talk about some of these benefits. There's the hospital, then there's sort of like the outpatient ones. Talk about things like physical therapy, things like prescriptions, and things like that.
Yes, the hospital and medical centers have a full array of VA services that the veteran might need, in addition to typical physical and medical screening, prescriptions, visual eyeglasses, dental, if they qualify for those. And again, every veteran does not qualify for services because if a person went into the military, served 3 or 4 years or 5 years, was discharged, and they had no medical issues and no injuries, none of those things, they are a veteran. They qualify for other veteran benefits, but perhaps not the medical.
Now, there are other benefits that I was surprised that were available to veterans. Let's talk about home loans, which I would imagine be very important.
It's extremely important, and there's two ways that a veteran can access a home loan. One through the VA, which is the federal, Veteran Affairs Federal, and one through the state. The VA home loan program is a very lucrative home loan program where a veteran with average credit and has a job can apply through the federal VA for a home loan. This is available to any veteran, no matter how long they served in the military, and they have honorable discharge. And the home loans are actually presented by private mortgage companies, but backed by the federal government. So the monies come from a private bank, but backed by the federal government. At the state level, our department, we have a mortgage bank that's within our own department, and we provide home loans also, but we carry the mortgage note ourselves for the full length of the loan. So a person can apply through our department, and it's not just for a home. It's for a farm, a home, a condominium, a mobile home. It could be a duplex. It could be a fourplex. It could be a number of housing arrangements that are funded through our department. And again, all the veteran needs is to show income, have an honorable discharge, and be able to make the payment. And what's great about ours at the state level is that we will work with any veteran who has financial difficulty along the way. So, for example, if they lose their job and they're unemployed for a while, we're not going to foreclose on them because we own the mortgage company in our department. We just restructure the loan.
Well, that's a nice benefit, especially in times like this, and especially what we've gone through financially over the last 5 years where some people have actually lost employment. Let's talk about eligibility for those loans. Can you describe that a little bit more?
Yes, sir. In order to be eligible for the loan, a person must have served honorably. They must have served the full tenure of their time in the military. In other words, if they signed up for 3 years and they served the full 3 years, then that's fine. If they signed up for 3 years and for some reason they were discharged prior to their full term of service for a number of reasons, they may not be eligible. But honorable discharge, average credit, for example, our mortgage rates are at the current 3.9%.
So that's below market.
It's below market. And the thing is, it's below market, but it's a good thing to have it through our department because we carry our own insurance. We offer no down payment. We work with a veteran on points lower than what they would have to go to a private bank. So it's a good deal. Any veteran that has an average job, that has average credit, can probably qualify for a loan with our department.
Something I saw that you have is financial consulting. Is it really somebody that has come under, let's say, financial duress, having difficulty, maybe they lost a job or can't find a job? What does that entail?
What that entails is we have staff in our department who are able to sit and talk with a veteran on his or her financial stability and their financial situation, to work with them for the purpose of allowing them to gain access to our housing market. And it may be that they've had some financial difficulties in the past, something that private banks would pass on because their credit history is not the greatest. But for us, it's veterans working with veterans. We would take a look at the whole veteran and what his or her potential is to allow them to enter into a contract to purchase a home through our department.
I want to move on to some of the other benefits that are available to our vets, and that's disability compensation. If you are in service and as a result of a war injury or something that occurs while you're in the military, let's say you're discharged, I would think that as you're discharged, that would come automatically. Is this something that you have to apply for? Or let me give you another example, Peter. What if, as you said, maybe it's a mental difficulty that develops as a result of combat that does not surface until later on?
Yes, you would think that would come automatically, but it does not. And the reason it does not is that many times the military service, before the person is discharged, does not know that a person has a disability, and so it could come afterwards. Typically, what happens when a person is about ready to be discharged from the military, they are sent through a very extensive medical and mental screening process. And if they show any signs of mental, emotional, depression, or any kind of physical injuries, those are recorded. And a person then is provided a percentage of a disability based upon the nature of their illness. If they're already out of the military and they've been discharged already, they can go to the VA and, again, get the medical and mental screening. And based upon their malady, be given a percentage of disability based upon how severe it is. And that's why we have the five-year extension when a person leaves the military, because some of these symptoms may not develop to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years after the person's out of the military. And we want to make sure that that person is covered with medical insurance from the VA after they're out of the military.
Explain the difference between, let's say, disability compensation and a disability pension.
A disability pension is provided to a person who was in the military and they're injured in the military, or they retire from the military. They're about ready to retire from the military, but they have some type of injury or illness that occurred while they're still in the military. Instead of giving a regular pension, they're given a disability pension at the time that they are discharged. And the difference is a disability pension is tax-free. And a service pension, in other words, service pension meaning they've served 20 years or more, is not tax-free.
Tax-free. That's nice.
If they're disabled. The other pension is actually a disability payment, what it is. When a person is out of the military, but they bring into civilian life some problem that they suffered in the military, they are assessed by the federal VA. And based upon that medical condition and how severe it is, they are given a percentage of a pension. A percentage can range from as low as 10% up to 100%. And it's usually in 10% increments all the way up. And that's based upon the nature of the injury and the severity of it. Now, some medical conditions are what we call presumptive. Presumptive means if you were in the military and you served in a certain part of the world in these time frames, it's presumed that these illnesses that you have were caused by the military. Let me give you one example. And we're talking about Vietnam-era veterans. Agent Orange is the one that comes to light. If a veteran served in Vietnam during certain years when Agent Orange was used as a defoliant in that country, and the veteran was affected, years later we're starting to see the veterans show up with injuries and illnesses that has been determined caused by Agent Orange. Some of these include diabetes. Some of these include ischemic heart disease, and there's a number of illnesses that are presumed to be caused by Agent Orange, and they qualify for a disability payment.
I want to move on to some other benefits that are available. One is mortgage insurance and also life insurance. Let's talk about that.
Life insurance is offered by the Department of Defense. When a person enters the military, when they first enter, they have the option of taking out a life insurance policy payable to whomever they would like to have. And it's a very low rate of payment on the life insurance. And it's offered when a person first goes into the military, typically during boot camp or basic training or officer training courses. usually at that point in time, most young people don't think in terms of life insurance. They see that as so far down the line, they're not interested. But the Department of Defense does a good job of selling them on the idea that this is not for you. It's for your next of kin. It's for someone who would benefit if something were to happen to you. So they sell that, and when I say sell, I don't mean dollars and cents, but in terms of ensuring that the veterans have all the knowledge that they can make a decision to take out the life insurance. Now, after a person is in the military, of course, they can also take advantage of that at a higher cost. But once they leave the military, then they would then take out an insurance policy just like any other civilian would at some private company.
I want to talk about something that really helped our economy after World War II, and that was education benefits. Can we talk about that?
Yes, sir, we can. That's a great subject to talk about because, you know, education is the key to success for anyone, not alone just veterans. And it's been said that after World War II, the GI Bill and World War II veterans built the nation, rebuilt the nation based upon education. And many of our community colleges and state universities in California were built after World War II with all the veterans returning. Fast forward to now, it's still important that veterans have education. And there are a number of programs and benefits that veterans qualify for education. For example, a veteran in the post-9/11 GI Bill, which, you know, after 9/11, is a very lucrative program for veterans in education. A veteran can leave the military and then attend school at the expense of the government, and this is not a gift. It's something that they've earned by serving in the military, that they can attend college or university or trade school and have the federal government pay for it. It's not everlasting. There's a limit on it, but typically it's enough to allow a veteran to go and get up to 2 or 3 full years of college or university credit. Now, the good part about that is that if the veteran is still in the military, they're not discharged yet, they can elect to reassign those benefits to a spouse or child. But they must do that before they leave the military, which means that a person in the military now can reassign his or her education benefits to a son or daughter, or split it between a son and a daughter, or split it 3 ways, and that they then can go to college or university at no cost.
Wow. So as we take a look at all these benefits and bring this to a conclusion, we've got benefits that are health care. We have benefits in terms of purchasing a home. We have college education. We have disability and disability pensions. We have financial consulting. There are a lot of benefits here. I think a lot of vets, Peter, probably aren't aware are available to them.
And that's part of our mandate, that is to get the word out to veterans. We have a Veteran Services Division here in our department, and our focus is on reaching those veterans to inform them of their benefits, to encourage them to register with the federal VA to take advantage of these benefits. But in addition to the federal VA, there are also state benefits, and every state has different benefits based upon the state. Here in California, we have a lot of state benefits. For example, a veteran can take advantage of free hunting license, free fishing license. They can take advantage of some library opportunities. There's a number of things that we do here in the state of California that offer to veterans. There's some opportunities with DMV, and there's some opportunities to have their military training suffice for licensing of the same position in civilian life here in California. So there's a lot of different advantages that we have here in California.
Peter, does the VA ever get involved in, let's say, job placement or helping retiring vets to get jobs? Let's say that I was in the military, I'm back from the war. It's a tough economy out there. Is there any counseling or any kind of benefits in trying to get vets jobs after they are released from the military?
Actually, that starts before they're released. Most military services now have what we call a TAP program. TAP stands for Transitional Assistance Program, where every retiring or military person leaving the military must go through a 1 or 2 week transition program where they are given instructions on how to access their medical benefits, their educational benefits, housing, all the things that we've just talked about. But the important thing to talk about is jobs, because that's really the key to everything. And once a person leaves the military, there are a number of programs here in California and other states that will assist a veteran in acquiring a job. For example, we work with a number of private nonprofit organizations whose focus is on jobs for veterans. Additionally, we have a number of large corporations and small companies in California that have special hiring programs for veterans. And some even give veterans preference points in some county and city government. But in terms of corporations, there are a number of corporations in California that focus on hiring veterans as a priority. And so every veteran is focused toward those companies. These companies are also identified in the veteran centers on campuses. Most colleges now have a veteran center, which is a place for veterans to go to congregate, to mingle, to talk to each other. These companies have a presence in those centers with information available. So there's a number of ways that veterans can access information about potential jobs.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of benefits here that aren't being taken advantage of. Peter, as we close, I'm going to give out your website that you've given me. It's called CalVet, CalVet.ca.gov. That's for California. And what was the other website that you had?
In California, it's CalVet, that's CalVet.ca.gov. But you can also use CDVA, which stands for California Department of Veterans Affairs, .ca.gov. Either one of those. At the federal level, it's USDVA, that stands for United States Department of Veterans Affairs, .us.gov.
And also, there's a toll-free number here. It's 877-741-8532. And Peter, I want to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. We've been speaking with Peter Gravett at the California Department of Veteran Affairs. And I want to thank you for bringing our listeners up to date. A lot of great stuff here that hopefully people will find helpful.
So thank you for the opportunity to speak to veterans and encourage all veterans to sign up with the VA for benefits.
You have a good day, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Well, that concludes this reprise edition on this holiday weekend. We'll be back next week with Kathleen Harris and myself, hoping that we find, or you find yourself, as we begin this new year, healthy and prosperous, and we'll have enough new programs to help keep you that way coming up in the year ahead. In the meantime, until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.